Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for March 14th, 2010, the first Kudzu Vine of 2010 in the daylight. Welcome always, Tim.
Good evening.
Yes, and Catherine is out this week, but of course that was planned. I think she let everybody know last week, but filling in the first half of the show ably for is Jennifer Reed of the Indigo Journal. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, since you're here, we're going to talk a lot of South Carolina politics early in the show, and I think it's a good thing that your U.S. Senate race is getting a lot of attention, which that means that a very conservative, very, in my opinion, out of touch U.S. Senator, Jim DeMint, that means that if he's getting attention, that's usually not good for an incumbent.
No, it's not. Jim DeMint sent some vulnerability in the last 3 months or so. Recent polls have put his favorability ratings, job approval ratings, in low 40s. And he's taken a little bit of flack in the local press for spending so much time away from South Carolina. And, of course, just in the last week or so, he got his official Democratic challenger, Charleston County Councilman Vic Rawl, jumped into the race. And he's going after him pretty hard right now, so it should be a much more exciting race than we first expected.
Yeah, that you were mentioning Vic Rawl. Tell us about his, because he just got in the race in the past few weeks since the last time you were on the show, so tell us about him.
Well, Vic is, he has an impeccable resume. He's the consummate statesman, in stark contrast to Jim DeMint. He's currently a Charleston County councilman. Prior to that, he served as a circuit court judge. He did 4 terms in the state legislature, very successful law practice before retiring. He's about 64 now, so he's got the time to run. And what's really cool about his campaign is he was actually recruited from the progressive roots that are kind of springing up in the Charleston area. So they actually went out and lobbied for him to get in the race. So he's got a lot of grassroots support. And if my press releases I've got here from him are any indication, he's going to be running a really tough campaign against Jim DeMint.
Yeah, but before I let Tim ask some questions, Mike Rux, who is a retired auto executive that apparently is still in the race, is he planning on moving out of the race, or is he going to be much of a factor?
I think he's going to stay in. I'm not sure what his deal is. Honestly, he got into the race during last year's state convention in April. And in almost a year now, he's only raised about $2,500. So I don't get the sense that he's very serious about this. Really nice guy, strong on the issues, but he's only been in South Carolina about 4 years now. He's a retired executive from Detroit, I believe. So he just never quite hired the campaign staff or really got his race going, which I think is a real shame because I think he could be a good candidate if he got serious about it. So. No, I don't think he's going to be a factor in this year's race.
Okay. Tim, jump in here with some questions about the Senate race.
I'm just going to ask right out front. A lot of people say Senator DeMint is not beatable. Is he beatable this year?
I don't know about this year. I think he's definitely beatable. I think the main thing that's kept people away this year is he's sitting on $3.2 million. And that's kind of challenging, especially for a Democrat from South Carolina. You know, we don't have a really strong bench. I do think if Vic Rawl had gotten in this race 6 months ago, he could have made a really strong run at him. DeMint is not well-liked by moderates and independents, as most of the polls have shown, even in conservative South Carolina. Like I said, he's got about a 41% approval rating right now. So there's plenty of room to go after him, but it seems like folks are hesitant about this year.
Does he seem But it just seems because I see Senator DeMint everywhere except in South Carolina, that he's not taking either the race or the state very seriously. Would I be right about that, or am I imagining that?
Well, no, I think that's a good point. He's got a new nickname. They're calling him D.C. DeMint in a lot of the papers because he spends more time up there than he does
DeMint.
In here. He's actually gotten a lot of flack in the local papers here, and his challenger, Vic Rawl, is pointing out that he's spending a little more time in Florida with our friend Marco Rubio campaigning for him than he is in South Carolina. And I think particularly this year, because we're facing a really bad budget crisis, we've got nearly 13% unemployment here in South Carolina, so people are wondering why he's spending so much time bringing home the bacon for Marco and not so much time in South Carolina. But so, yeah, definitely coming up more and more.
Yeah, I guess the last thing I want to say or ask about this, because I haven't heard if he has. Has Lindsey Graham had anything to say about this race at all yet?
No, he's been pretty mum, and he tends to do that. The two of them don't really get along. They're from opposite ends of the spectrum, you know.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham, in stark contrast to Jim DeMint, got close to two-thirds of the vote on both. I mean, you know, he pulled in a big chunk of the Democrat vote in 08. Pretty well respected by both sides. He's, you know, pretty moderate. And so the two of them kind of stay in separate corners, I guess is a good way to describe it. Yeah, no, not a lot of interaction between the two of them.
Okay, thank you, David.
Yeah, now on that U.S. Senate race again, I know that Chad McGowan dropped out, and that was before Vic Rawls got in the race. Now, also, Mullis McLeod, when he got left the governor's race, there was some speculation that he'd get in the U.S. Senate race. Does Vic Rawls being in the U.S. Senate race preclude that then?
I think it does. I think Mullis McLeod just isn't interested in running this year. Honestly, I don't know exactly why he got out. I know he was having fundraising difficulties, but I just get the sense that he's not wanting to continue campaigning for the rest of the year. So I don't see him getting in that race. And with Vic Rawl in there, who's got the support of the party, along with, you know, pretty strong grassroots following, I don't see Mullins jumping into that one anytime soon, which is a shame because I think he'd really rock that race if he got in, but I don't think he's going to do it.
Okay, so that kind of sets the table on the U.S. Senate race. Now, staying on Jim DeMint, he's starting to court the teabagger vote, if you will, and this has raised the ire of some more establishment Republicans, and this was national news on Politico. How's that looking in South Carolina?
I think it depends on what part of the state you're in and what socioeconomic status you have. He is very popular with the far right, particularly with the Tea Party crowd here in South Carolina. It can only help him in the primary situation, but he's not facing the challenger, of course. He's become a bit of a spokesman for the party, especially here and nationwide. I think he really relishes being an ideological leader. I think I mentioned to you last time his background's in marketing and advertising. And so he loves coming up with these great slogans and all kinds of themes. And I think the Tea Party movement really speaks to him because he can speak directly to those people via the press and the media. So while he's never been very powerful in the Senate, as a legislator, I think he's never passed a bill, actually, that he actually authored. He's been very successful in doing the talk show circuits and the new media stuff and appealing to that kind of Tea Party movement directly. So, yeah, I mean, he's definitely their guy. And I don't know, yeah. I don't know what kind of effect it will have in 2010, but he's definitely very popular amongst the far right element because of that, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like when 2010 comes and they look at Jim DeMint's career thus far, much more will be said than done.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it goes.
I just get that sense of what you're saying. Well, I guess then that leaves the governor's race, which within the state, even though in national politics, Senate races get more attention, within your state, it's particularly during these kind of budget times, governor's races are bigger deals. Tell us first, give us the Democratic side, then we move to the Republican side.
Sure. This is actually the race that the Democrats are putting all their energy into. We think we have a real shot at taking back the governor's mansion this year because of all the Mark Sanford mess. We've got three candidates left on the Democratic side. State Senator Robert Ford from Charleston, a well-known African-American civil rights leader. He was running on a very interesting video poker platform, which is going over, well, not so well. On the Democratic side, he's also a school voucher proponent all of a sudden. I would consider him kind of the also-ran at this point with that kind of platform. The two guys that are really in the hunt right now are State Superintendent of Education Jim Rex and State Senator Vincent Shaheen, who's really been coming on strong in the last couple of weeks. We had a recent poll that showed, I think, those two were tied in terms of their percentages 3 months out from the primaries. And looks like Senator Shaheen is really getting a strong campaign together. He's lined up. Most of the state legislators behind him are endorsing him. And it kind of feels like the establishment's kind of falling into line behind him. And I'm not so sure about Jim Rex. Poor Rex is having a little bit of a hard time raising any money right now. I think he's got less than $30,000 in the bank compared to Senator Shaheen's $900,000. So it's looking like it might not be so good for for my good friend Dr. Rex heading into the primary situation. For whatever reason, his campaign has just not caught fire, and Shaheen seems to be the one the grassroots people are kind of moving towards and the donors. Very moderate guy, very strong environmental record. He's kind of the one the Republicans fear as well, I would say, at this point. On the GOP side, it's kind of up in the air. It's a four-way race. State Rep. Nikki Haley, who has been kind of a darling of the red state crowd, very strong backing from the Sanfordites and from the national right roots, but isn't really moving very fast in the campaign. She's kind of lagging behind. The other three, Attorney General Henry McMaster, who's doing very well, along with Congressman Gresham Barrett, who's already on the air here. He's got so much money. And finally, our good friend Andre Bauer, the current lieutenant governor, who's made national headlines lately for his comments comparing stray animals and people on welfare, indicating that we should quit feeding both. So, yeah, it's that pack there. And it's still pretty much a three-way race between those top contenders right now.
Yeah. Now, has there been any polling looking at the Democratic candidates versus Republican candidates head-to-head? And if so, does Jim Rex or does Vincent Shaheen do better?
And the latest head-to-head poll was back in December. That was before Rex's very sad fundraising numbers came out. And it actually showed him very competitive against both Andre Bauer, I believe, and Gresham Barrett. And it showed him within single points of all the top contenders. Vincent Shaheen at the time just wasn't well enough known to really create any kind of buzz. I don't think he even registered on this poll. So there hasn't been a recent one since Shaheen kind of caught fire. So we don't really know how that's going to play out just yet.
Yeah, it seems kind of hard to analyze. Now, one thing, it seems like that more progressive wing of the party is supporting State Senator Shaheen, whereas maybe more conservative Democrats are, feel more comfortable with Rex. Is that a pretty good analysis?
I think almost there's a generational divide, because Senator Shaheen, I would actually say, is a little bit more conservative.
Okay.
There's a huge age gap between the two. I think Shaheen is in his late 30s, Rex is in his early to mid-60s, and you're seeing kind of that schism among the supporters a little bit. You're also seeing Rex has the support of a lot of the educators, which is a huge progressive voting block, of course, in the Democratic primary, whereas everybody else seems to be lining up behind Shaheen. I think the thinking is that Shaheen's more moderate, and he might be a little more conservative, and he's a real clean-cut guy. And I think the establishment folks and a lot of the interest groups just feel a little bit more comfortable with him. Especially since he's raising so much money compared to Rex.
with the inside baseball crowd, the folks that read about politics on the internet, you kind of get the whole money part of the game, if you will.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, questions about the Democratic side of the governor's race.
Oh, yeah, and when we get to the Republican side, I really want to ask some questions. There's some fun there. The question I really want to ask is about both sides. Are we looking at a distinct possibility, Jennifer, of a runoff in both parties?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because you need 50% to avoid a runoff. And Rex has the name ID, because, you know, you ask any teacher in South Carolina who Jim Rex is, they're going to know that. He doesn't have enough cash right now to close the deal. And with Shaheen sitting on nearly $1 million, he's got more than enough cash to get his name ID up there and make it competitive. So especially with Robert Ford still in the race, I think there's a really good chance that it'll go to a runoff on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, certainly. There are four of them. And
yeah,
nobody has a clear advantage yet.
Is Ford then essentially the spoiler on the Democratic side?
I don't want to use the word spoiler. I think I don't really know why he's running, to be honest with you. I think he's trying to get attention for his video poker platform, which he's been pushing for years. And this is just what'll dwindle down to three. So I think it's kind of hard to say he's a spoiler, but
Now when you say video poker platform, he is a strong proponent of video poker.
He thinks video poker will save everything in South Carolina. It will save funding for everything. It's a very unique platform. He's a big gaming proponent. Yay gambling is kind of his slogan. That's not going over real well, of course. And the other crowd that he's kind of gotten into bed with in last year is the school voucher crew, which is most notably aligned with Mark Sanford, the libertarian interest group. So, yeah, I respect the man. He has a very noble past, but last couple of years, I don't know. I don't know where he's going with these platforms. So, yeah.
But he is an African American.
He is.
Now, I know that in Georgia, sometimes in the primaries, African Americans can constitute as much as 50% of the primary vote.
Mm-hmm.
How does that break down in South Carolina? Are they a large segment of the Democratic vote over there?
It is a large segment of the Democratic vote. I don't remember the percentages off the top of my head. In the general, I know it breaks down to about between 26%, 23-26%, depending on what part of the state you're in. But, yeah, it's a huge block. I will say, you know, his race will help him in to a certain extent. But even with that, he has no money. So I don't know how he's going to get his message out, especially with the African-American vote, how he's going to get the boots on the ground like Shaheen, for example, and get folks to the poll to help him out. He's angered a lot of the African-American community with his platform, so he's definitely the wild card. He's the one everybody's kind of wondering about, but I think the assumption right now is it's pretty much Shaheen and Rex right now.
Okay, and before I throw it back to David, I'm going to have to slip over to the Republican side. I'm about to bust to do this.
We're
going to
have time for that, Tim. We're going to have plenty of time for that.
I really am anxious to ask you, what is up with Andre Bauer? Now, let me read this statement. He's talking about people that get government aid. In a speech you made, he said, "My grandmother was not a highly educated woman, but she told me as a small child to quit feeding stray animals. You know why? Because they breed." Now this is not the first gap this guy has pulled. And you would think that as the sitting lieutenant governor, he would be in a perfect position to, walk right into the governor's mansion in November if he could run a good, clean, hard-hitting campaign. But he's stumbling all over the place, and the newest round of polling I see shows him having dropped out of the lead on the Republican side. Is there a sense that this guy's campaign is falling into disarray over there?
Yes and no. I think there's he definitely has a propensity to talk faster than his brain can process at times. This is not the first time he's done something like this. Yeah, I mean, it's a mess. His favorables have just plummeted, of course. Actually, this past week, you're going to flip out when you hear this, he allegedly has hired Chip Salzman, who, of course, had to bow out of the RNC chairmanship race last year because of the because he sent out that the Barack the Magic Negro CD.
Oh, yeah, Christmas. Yeah.
He hired that guy to, as his
lead
Salzman
now. Oh, that's terrific news, yeah.
So, yeah, he's going full guns on this. He actually did some radio ads and some smaller ads pushing this welfare reform, and he's not backing down from it. I will say this about him. While most of the state kind of rolls their eyes and crosses their fingers and hopes that he doesn't get in the Senate, I mean the governor's mansion, he has a rabid following amongst the evangelical crowd here, especially in the upstate. And those people will vote for him no matter what happens. And I think it's roughly 60% of Republican voters in South Carolina consider themselves evangelicals. So he's also the hardest working campaigner I've ever seen. The man's just a machine. So I would not count him out at this point, despite all of this.
So you're saying his vote, his base is definitely going to vote matter what.
I mean, it's just, like I said, it's rabid. And the man can do no wrong in a lot of people's eyes. And it's a small segment of the population that's the hardcore Andre supporters, but they're going to show up. And so that's why I'm not saying never, but it does appear like it's that Gretchen Barrett and Henry McMaster, who have more money and aren't quite as, you know, prone to gaffes, are kind of pulling ahead right now. So, fingers crossed. Yeah, I don't have an answer for that one. I don't know what's up with him.
Okay, David, jump in there.
Yeah, we were talking money earlier with Senator Ford, and you said there wasn't much of it, but then two of his issues, the video poker and the school vouchers, I know that there's groups that will give money to politicians that, you know, carry their water for them. Is that not shown up on a disclosure yet?
Not yet. I think that's what he was hoping. I think he was hoping that those folks would show him some love and throw some money his way. But that hasn't happened. I think mainly because State Representative Nikki Haley, who's the Stanford-esque candidate, is in the race on the GOP side, and she already stands for school vouchers, for example. That whole crowd is supporting her very fervently and will continue to, and not, you know, throw any money Senator Ford's way. The video gaming folks don't seem to have thrown much money his way so far. Maybe a little bit, but not too much. So, no, I don't think it's working out quite like he planned.
So he kind of, before he secured the funding, he just took a gamble, if you will, of his own.
In fairness to him, he's had this platform for a good decade, probably. I mean, this is not, the school voucher thing is new in the last year, but the video poker, every year it's trying to push video poker through the state house. So this is nothing. This is just bumping it up to a new level in terms of his public relations effort, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And on the Republican side, Tim got us started. We are talking about who Andre Bauer has lined up. Now, is he still not working? Is he still working with Rod Sheely?
He is. Mm-hmm.
He is. And if folks don't know about Rod Sheely, he actually went to jail for political consulting at one point, which is pretty hard to do, but he had done something so over the line. It had something to do with running his sister and then running a candidate of African-American descent as a foil, if you will, and it was just a long, sticky mess. But he came out of the Lindsey Graham school, so it sounds like he's got two advisors of interesting note, if you will.
He is. Rod is actually taking more of a backseat. In the past, Sheely has always run his campaigns. And say what you will about Rod Sheely, the man is brilliant. I mean, he's just the Lee Atwater of modern politics here. You know, he will just do whatever it takes to get the job done. He actually had a brain tumor last year, so he's kind of pulled back and is doing more state house races. He's still advising, but it sounds like Chip is going to be the lead consultant. But yeah, that's quite the dynamic duo Andre's got helping him get out of this mess. So it will be interesting, let's say, the next 3 months. Definitely worth tuning in for on the GOP side.
Yeah, I was in Washington about 5-6 years ago, and Rod Sheley was speaking in a political consultant convention. He talked about how he a new candidate he had, Andre Bauer, and how he had taken him, and they had bought a rented a asphalt truck, and they went to town and filled in potholes and got the local media to take pictures. How this guy's not talking about doing things, he's done things even before he's elected. You know, it sounded really smart. I mean, it was just some little thing, but it was a way to get in every little paper by doing, you know, something that, you know, nobody's against. There was nothing controversial about filling in potholes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, pretty smart little thing to do. Now then, of course, you get into bigger issues like welfare reform, and Andre can go off the plantation, if you will. Now, you talk about some of the other candidates. You talked about one candidate that you said he's got so much money, he's already on the air. Tell us about him and his chances.
That's Congressman Gresham Barrett from the South Carolina 3rd District, who is, of course, stepping down from that seat. Well, he's still in the seat. Actually, he's been popped recently because he's missed more votes than he's attended, it seems, in Washington lately, running for governor. In the last week, he started running ads defending his record in Congress. It was kind of a mix of a biographical ad and a defense of his time in Congress, and he paid for this ad out of his congressional account, which is raising some eyebrows. He did that by not mentioning governor anywhere in the ad, though everybody knows he's running for governor. He's been leading the fundraising pack, all of the candidates now, from the beginning. He's done a really great job of leveraging the Washington connection, the Washington money, and he's doing a really fantastic job billing himself as the jobs candidate, something I wish Shaheen or Rex would do a little more of. But yeah, he's just got a huge war chest. He's got over $2 million in the bank right now, and already up on the air statewide. So he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. But he has taken a lot of hits. I don't know if y'all saw this, but he was captured being booed by the Tea Party crowd last year during a rally in the upstate. And so his opponents are giving him a hard time for voting for the bailouts last year and stuff like that. Kind of the rhino shouts come from the crowds every now and then from the Tea Party crowd. So he doesn't have a lot of Tea Party cred, let's put it that way, but he also has a very strong following with the evangelical crowd and a boatload of cash. So I wouldn't underestimate him.
So it sounds like all three leading Republicans do well with the evangelical crowd. So, it's just interesting that all three are that way. Although it sounds like Barrett, just looking at his website, he's endorsed by the Chamber of Commerce. Has he got a little more of the establishment Chamber of Commerce Republican crowd?
I think he and Henry McMaster are kind of splitting that vote. He's definitely the one who's pushing the hardest economic message. Which is interesting. He was a businessman before he got into Congress, but he's always been known more for his social issues, partial birth abortion kind of votes, things like that. So he's done a really good job of revamping himself, and he and Henry McMaster are going for that kind of establishment, middle-of-the-road business kind of endorsement. Yeah.
Yeah, so four strong candidates. If the race was today, who would get the highest percentage, and who would get the lowest percentage, and what would those percentages be, you think?
Oh, gosh. I think Barrett's going to lead the pack, but just slightly behind, just ahead of Henry McMaster. And I think Nikki Haley might pull single digits. Potential to be a really strong candidate in the future. I just think her race was premature by about 4 to 8 years. So if I had to order the pack, I'd say Barrett, McMaster, Bauer, then Haley. But I think it's probably going to be a runoff between Barrett and McMaster at this point. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
I might change my mind tomorrow.
Yeah, and so it seems like Bauer needs to think long and hard about maybe just stepping back to his lieutenant governor's office and biding his time.
I don't think he's going to do that, but, yeah, wouldn't we all like that? No.
His ego won't let him.
No.
Any more questions on the Republican side of the governor's race before we talk about any of these congressionals?
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at the Rasmussen poll I know you saw done recently on the governor's race. And I guess the question that I wanted to ask really involves both sides again. There seems to be a lot more decided voters on the Republican side. As a matter of fact, on the Democratic side, something like 51% of the respondents are undecided, where on the Republican side it's only like a third. Why is that? Is it name recognition or?
It is name recognition. Keep in mind who's running. On the GOP side, you have an attorney general who's in his second term in a statewide office.
Uh-huh.
You have Congressman Gretchen Barrett, of course. And
uh-huh.
then you have so you have an attorney general, a lieutenant governor, and Andre Bauer,
uh-huh.
who's made national headlines for his distasteful remarks. And so
yeah.
you have three people right there who Henry McMaster, also before serving as attorney general, was a state party chair. So he's got a huge network, very well known across the state. The only one who's really struggling with that still, I would say, is Nikki Haley, who's a Midland State House rep. But and on the Democratic side, Jim Rex, I was kind of surprised Jim Rex's numbers weren't higher. He is state superintendent of education, which I guess isn't as high profile as an attorney general. But what's important, I think, with Rex is that he's well known amongst the Democratic primary voters, namely the education crowd. And Shaheen has surged ahead. I think his last poll he was at 6%. So more people know him now, but certainly similar to Nikki Haley because he's a state house rep. He just doesn't have the same kind of name recognition as the others.
Yeah.
So,
Is it possible on the Republican side? You said that Bauer and Barrett are both very popular with the evangelical crowd. Do you think that perhaps they're splitting their vote to McMaster's benefit?
Ooh, that's a good point. That will be interesting to see. So far, I kind of expected the evangelicals to line up behind Andre Bauer before his comments. Now
mm-hmm.
what you're saying is they're kind of spreading across the field. Henry McMaster has done a fair amount of pandering. He pushed the I believe license plates in the courts, even though he didn't know that was going to, well, he knew that was not going to work. But yeah, I think that's more of a weakness for McMaster compared to the other two. If I had to guess, I would guess that that crowd would split their vote between Barrett and Bauer. And if Henry McMaster has any sense, he will go more for the business community and not worry about pandering to that base so much, because I think in comparison to those two, he doesn't have quite as much credibility. That's just my initial thought on
that. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up, Dave.
Yes, now there's about three congressional races that are seem to be really interesting, two open seats and, of course, the Joe Wilson seat. Jennifer, you pick which order you want to take these in. Which one's the most topical?
I think Joe Wilson and the Rob Miller race is really starting to heat up right now.
Okay, tell us about it.
Well, Miller and Wilson are going for their second matchup. Both men this time, though, thanks to Representative Wilson's little shout-out, have over $2 million in the bank moving forward, though. The National Party is getting involved on both sides. And just in the last week, you've seen the two of them, or the two camps, start to really go after each other here. And, of course, we're still many months out from the general election. This week, one of the narratives that we're seeing from the Wilson team is hitting Miller for allegedly hiding. After the outburst was made, Rob Miller, the Democrat, kind of laid low for a couple of months. And I guess the Wilson team thinks that they can exploit that. So that's the narrative you're seeing pushed. It's interesting. Last year, it was all about Rob Miller, who's a former Marine, really attacking Jay Wilson. The one thing the Miller team did really well was public relations, and they just went after Jay Wilson. I mean, every other day in the paper was such and such is wrong with Jay Wilson. And this year, it feels a little bit more like they're playing defense, which has me a little nervous. He's got a new team, a young team behind him. And so, yeah, the sparks are already starting to fly, and it should be a really interesting race with both the national parties getting involved so early. Yeah, so that would be a good one to watch.
Yeah, and then now the two open seats. Henry Brown retiring in 2010, District 1. Just a slew of candidates. You don't have to go through all the candidates, but tell us.
Yeah, I couldn't. in that race, that one's really interesting. The GOP, I think, had 9 or 10 folks have already jumped into the race. There's a Tea Party candidate on top of that and 3 Democrats running. It's just a free-for-all. It's a mess. The GOP race is going to be interesting because they've got 2 big names that are running in that race. Paul Thurman, son of the legendary late Senator Strom Thurmond, of course, along with Tumpy Campbell, who is the son of the late Governor Campbell. So you've got 2 political scions right there going after each other. Probably the most interesting candidate, though, is Tim Scott, who is the first African-American Republican sitting in the State House, I think, since Reconstruction. And he had been running for lieutenant governor and switched races. And he's, I don't want to say there's a favorite in the 10-way race at this point, but he's definitely doing very well, which would be interesting if he ends up winning the runoff in that election, what that will mean for Democrats in that seat. On the Democratic side, we'd hope to get a really strong candidate in there, a state house representative, for example. But everybody seems to be leery of running in 2010. Without Obama on the ticket. There is a gentleman, Air Force Colonel Robert Burton, who ran for adjutant general about 10 years ago. He's running and seems to be kind of the front runner, the only one who's really invested in campaign infrastructure, and he's raising money and seems to be doing really well. So I get the feeling it'll be him for the Democrats, and then, I don't know, on the other side. Maybe Tim Scott or one of the 2 heirs apparent on the GOP side.
Yeah, Dick Withington. For some reason, that name sounds familiar. Has he done anything noteworthy that would make me remember him?
I don't think so. He has been a perennial candidate, I believe. I think he's run for a few other local things in the Myrtle Beach area. Honestly, I don't know a great deal about him. To my knowledge, he hasn't raised any real money. I get the sense he's a little more conservative, along with Robert Dobbs, who actually is the other Democrat running, was a former U.S. Senate candidate in the Republican primary in Wisconsin back in 2000 or 2002.
Robert Dobbs.
Yeah. So, yeah, those two, I don't really know much about them, but I do know Robert Dobbs is a former Republican candidate. So that's why I'm thinking it's going to go towards Burton this year if he can raise any kind of money. But, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The last race I guess we thought we'd talk about was that other open seat where Saul's running for governor. What's that district like and what's going to happen there?
Which one is this? The third district? Congressman Barrett's district?
Barrett's seat, yes.
Yeah, that is really a tough district for Democrats. It's a shame because we've got a really great candidate, Jane Dyer, who's a former Air Force fighter pilot, current commercial pilot, just a really great lady, does it wonderful on the debate circuit, strong on the issues. A conservative Democrat is running. I believe it's an R-17 district, though, R-plus-17. So it's probably going to come down to the GOP side. And it's a six-way race right now, and there's no clear front runner. That side, though, has made a lot of noise recently, though. Rex Rice, who's a state house rep, endorsed by Mike Huckabee recently, is actually trying to push through a bill to ban funding or insurance coverage for women seeking abortion, even if their lives are in danger. So that's been making the making the papers recently. I think they're all trying to run further to the right than the other folk in the race, and a bit of a mess right now on the GOP side. So, yeah, that one should be interesting, but likely going to end up being a Republican in that seat, and right now it's just a toss-up with them all trying to run further to the right than the other person next to them.
Yeah, we see that a lot of Republican races, who can go to the right. On any of these congressional seats?
On the seat right now, there's really two races that the Democrats are watching really closely in the state right now. The first is the 2nd District race, and the other is John Spratt's race up in the 5th District. The GOP's actually managed to mount a credible challenger this year with State Senator Mick Mulvaney. And those are the two that folks are watching most closely right now, hoping that John Spratt holds on in that seat. because Mick Mulvaney, he's a Sanfordite. He's known for his close affiliation with Mark Sanford, which I think will hurt him in the general. But he's also a very wealthy man. And so he has the funding to give the House Budget Chairman quite a run for his money this year. So those are kind of the two races that everybody's watching right now, I think.
Yeah. Well, before we let Jennifer go, Tim, any questions on any other things in South Carolina politics?
I do want to ask one question about that 2nd District race. Jennifer, I was reading that it is already the most expensive congressional race in the history of your state. What exactly have them two guys been spending the money on, like in the last quarter of 2009, a year before the actual election?
Mainly on consultants. The one thing Rob Miller's doing really well, though, is he's already hired a field director. So he's spending his money getting boots on the ground to help him with voter turnout. And on the GOP side, it's more Wilson's spending a ton of money on new media consultants as well as communication consultants. He's been trying to make a name for himself across the country. So it's mainly consultants and staff at this point. It seems to be
what
they're investing
in. And 2 years ago, Congressman Wilson won by 8 points.
Mm-hmm.
Is that race destined to be closer this year because of two little words that he said?
Oh, definitely. With that amount of money in a district that is definitely GOP-leaning, this competitive, I think it's still going to be at least a single-point race. The main problem Miller had last year is he ran out of money about six weeks out. And
well,
so this year it won't be a problem. And especially with him investing in field organizing so early, I think it's going to be a race to watch, definitely.
Okay, thanks, David.
Yeah, well, Jennifer, we thank you for coming on. I can't think of a guest we've kept so long, yet the time has flown by so fast because you're so good.
I don't know if you can hear my phone beeping because it's dying on me now. But, yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
You have an interesting day.
We'll keep having you back because South Carolina continues to make headlines across the country at different times.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Yeah, Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you. Y'all have a good night.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that was just great. I tell you what, I think we've covered South Carolina as thoroughly as anywhere on the audio internet has.
David, I honestly got to jump in and say, I thought we had some characters here in Georgia, but I believe they may be getting topped by our neighbor to the northeast of us, don't you?
Oh, I tell you, well, you know, you've seen the different things going on, and it's not just one person over there, and Isn't it some irony, though, that Strom Thurmond's white child, because, of course, we know that our white grandson, and it's two generations, might actually be defeated in the Republican primary by an African-American. That's an irony. I have no dog in that primary fight, but I just, you know, the historical significance is not lost on me. Well, let's go ahead. I mean, we covered South Carolina. Let's talk about some other things real quick in our last quarter hour. Ralph Reed, at one point during the week, it looked like he was going to run for Congress. I was all excited, thinking this was going to be very winnable with Ralph Reed as the nominee, and then he just snatched it away from us and decided he didn't want to run. Tim, any analysis on why he decided not to?
Well, he says he's not running, David, because of this new organization he leads. I don't know so much about that. I personally think it's because he still remembers the message that Republican voters sent him 4 years ago. I mean, here was Ralph Reed on top of the world. I mean, he was on the cover of Time magazine, you know, the right hand of God, blah, blah, blah. And he lost by 12 points to Casey Cagle, who was pretty much statewide a political unknown then. What we do know, or what the voters did know, was that he was not Ralph Reed. Ralph Reed is the kind of guy that is just too controversial, which means people either love him or they hate him. And apparently, he's got more detractors. He has probably kicked more teeth in along the way and the type of stuff that he's done in Republican politics. And that's great if you're a field worker. But when you're a candidate and you're having to coddle these people, well, they don't forget. Now, I think Ralph Reed probably took an internal poll or something and saw that there was no way, don't you think?
That's what I think. I think that he would have had a tough time in the general, but then those numbers would have been given by his opponents and probably kept him out of the nomination, and he saw that in two losses, and he would be done. If he's not already done as a candidate, he can still be a major player. I don't understand why he needs to become a TV talking head. I mean, you could argue that, you know, TV talking heads, you know, Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, have a lot more power than the average congressman, certainly, and probably even the average senator in their Republican
Party. I've wondered about that, too. I mean, he was going to run, or thinking about running, to be one of 435. And when he was going to run here in Georgia, he was going to run as lieutenant governor, which sometimes is pretty much a forgotten title in this state because the governor scoops up most of the headlines. Why do you think that Ralph Reed, with his ego, would point at those types of races? Wouldn't you think he'd be more the governor-senator type?
Well, yeah, and you think that, well, it's maybe they felt they needed to rebuild his resume before trying to run for governor, if you will, and that would have been the stepping stone. Honestly, I think this district was a bad fit for him. The 7th district, I think, is going to be one of the most changed after the census. And redistricting, I think it's one that a good hunk of this district, they may just have to sacrifice being their Republican Party. I think he would have been a much better fit when Paul Brown won his race. You know, that I believe that district includes Toccoa, includes Athens, some places he's familiar with. I think that might have been a better fit for him. And even that district that Nathan Deal's leaving, or that may be where Toccoa's at, but, I mean, that district would have been a better fit. I think the 7th district – the Republicans that are left are too moderate, and the thing's turning every day. I think I saw a figure, Gwinnett County is now majority-minority. At least their under 18 population is. It's just not a good fit for somebody as conservative as Ralph Reed.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, and you're right about the 9th district up there. That's among the most conservative districts in the United States. I have seen the stats that show that Lender's district is changing a lot, and I think you hit it right on the head. I don't think Reed could have won there. I don't think he's the type of candidate that the Republican voters are looking for down there. They're more business-oriented, more moderate. I don't want to call them big city Republicans, but even in Georgia, there's Atlanta area metro Republicans, and then there's Republicans up our way, and that's two different types of animal, isn't it? Oh, yeah. It's in that. So that may be the book on that. And, of course, we can analyze the 7th District, the candidates are in, on future weeks. Now, another story out of Arkansas, I guess you'd say, all this kind of a national story. Mike Huckabee, who everybody assumed would be a candidate in 2012, because he did a lot better, I think, than people expected in 2008. He said it doesn't sound like he's a candidate. He told a group at New York University that he's enjoying his show. He doesn't even know if he could take a year or two off without an income, which selling books and having your own TV show, I can't imagine that the income is not there from that. Tim, what do you think on Mike Huckabee, running or not?
I don't so much pay attention to these guys when they say these types of things. It's pretty much standard fare, the I don't know speech, I like to call it, because you see that sort of thing all the time. The thing I wonder about, though, is right now I'm on the Hedgehog Report, and I'm looking at a thread that David Wissing did back on the 9th, and it shows a poll from Iowa, which, of course, kicks off the thing. And there's Mike Huckabee leading the GOP field in Iowa. I've seen polls around the country. Mike Huckabee doing very well, running even with or ahead of Mitt Romney, and far ahead of Sarah Palin, even in the most conservative areas of the South where she should be their darling. I've got to wonder, if he continues to see these polls, how could he ignore them? Could he?
Yeah, I mean, you would think that he would just want the chance to get the nomination. My thinking is maybe he thinks that while you can get the nomination in 2012, that it's really not going to be that easy to defeat President Obama. And that's what I think. I think the economy is going to be in much better shape by that point. I mean, it may be a little rough in 2010, but in 2012 it's going to have turned around a decent amount. And it's just going to be hard to beat a sitting president that people are going to say, look, he did inherit a lot of problems. It's better today than it was the day he took over.
So perhaps you think he's going to make a calculated move and skip a turn. Let somebody else be the fall guy.
And at his age, not only skip a turn, just skip out on it. I don't know. Maybe he enjoys having TV. Well, we just said Ralph Reed should, get on TV and forget a House seat. Now, of course, the presidency is more important than a talking head job, but you would think, but maybe that's what he's saying. He enjoys that, and I just can't imagine the money's that important. I don't know what he did with his books. I don't know. Maybe he gave the proceeds, I guess he's, what, 2 or 3 books now, to charity. But those books, I mean, they have pretty wide distribution, so you got to know that his advance was pretty decent. So he's made enough that he can live a regular lifestyle, and maybe not a multimillionaire lifestyle, but I don't know that that's a goal of his.
I know this. If these guys are politicians worth their salt, they've got the fire in the belly, what we call Potomac fever. And you just can't turn around and walk away from that. And so I'm going to say, if these polls continue to show him leading the Republican pack, I don't see how he can ignore that. I know what you're saying about thinking that perhaps President Obama might be unbeatable, but that's 2 years away, and he's leading these polls right now. I've got to want, and you know how long it takes to run for president. So I've got to think that any decision he makes, he's going to have to do it pretty soon, right?
Yeah, well, he does have a little bit of a leg up in Iowa, which would be a key state for the Republicans. I tell you this, though, I do think the reason he has such a hold there is he's the conservative side of Sarah Palin, with all the crazy and all the baggage and all the nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that could be a little bit of an appeal, and that when it comes to
the governing side, he may be willing to use government a little too much for the average Republican, which to me makes him a better elected official.
Well, I'll tell you who else loves him, too.
Children and
evangelicals really love him. Now, they really do. I know some of these evangelicals. I've got a friend, a gospel singer. I go to their website. I look at the pictures, and they're somewhere at some convention singing, and guess who's standing up there playing the guitar for him? Mike Huckabee. Evangelicals love this guy. Sarah Palin would desperately need those people to challenge Mitt Romney, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she could not possibly beat Mitt Romney without the evangelical vote, which is a huge vote on the in the Republican primaries, especially in a state like Iowa. If Mike Huckabee jumps in that race, Sarah Palin's done.
Yeah, and that is something you have to think about. And I just don't see why people would not take a Mike Huckabee over Sarah Palin if you're a conservative Republican. I mean,
right?
I mean, he just seems like a much more intelligent individual. Maybe
he
feels the same way on X issue, but he knows Africa is a continent, not a country. I mean, he knows the basic things. I mean, the guy's not. The guy has a level of intelligence that she doesn't have. And so,
right.
You know, that's why I see him as a more appealing candidate.
Well,
but then that's probably the kiss of death. Like a Democrat like David McLaughlin sees him as a more appealing candidate.
Well, no, David, I'm an AVP already. Anybody but Palin. Anybody. I don't care who it is. Even
yep.
if it's going to be a Republican, it's going to beat us. You know, anybody but her. It would be a disgrace if that person got anywhere near the Oval Office, even on the tour they do, you know.
Oh, well, you've seen the polling numbers. The American public as a whole, the independent swing voters, they don't want any part of her. So,
I hope you're right.
We've got about 3 minutes time for about one topic. I'm thinking Kentucky politics, and the way you love this Kentucky Republican primary, I think you'll be with that, Tim. Grayson and Ron Paul, they're going at each other.
Yeah.
Which of these attacks do you think is the most damning?
Well, you know, it was inevitable that Grayson was going to attack David. He's 20 points behind in the polls now. And of course, as you read in the Politico article, what I think is really funny about this, did you notice that Grayson's people said, well, that's all the media's fault. That's not our fault. You guys won't call Rand Paul out for being the nutcase that he is. What he's trying to do is compare or make a connection between Rand Paul and his father. I don't think that's going to work so much in the primary, but I tell you what it could do. If he goes to throwing enough darts, they could have a damaged nominee emerge, and we could win that race in November.
Yeah, and
that's where I think it's going to make a difference is in November.
Yeah, if he paints as a you know, if he paints the Paul movement as the, you know, second coming of the LaRouche movement or something.
Right.
And I know they're different, but that kind of thing, that's a good point that I don't think is even made in the Politico article. But that is a good point. But I will tell you, the attacks that Rand Paul put back were just was accusing him of endorsing former President Bill Clinton. I have no idea. He may have done that, and a lot of times some of these guys switch parties, like our Republican governor endorsed Bill Clinton twice because he used to be a Democrat. Now, the one that I think is just nonsensical is Trey Grayson, the Secretary of State of the state of Kentucky, issued a welcoming statement towards President Obama upon his inauguration. This is a function of his office. You welcome the president when you're Secretary
yeah.
of State.
But it's,
he
but it's,
wouldn't be doing his job.
It worked with Charlie Crist, though, right? It worked with Charlie Crist.
It'll probably work for some voters here, and that's a sad state of affairs.
But don't you think
to welcome the president?
Don't you think Grayson's attacks right now are kind of an act of desperation?
Well, it shows that he respects him and almost fears him, if you will. But then Paul, you know, attacked him back. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like they fear each other. I mean, this is definitely one of the primary races in the country.
Let them attack each other. Like I said, maybe nobody's thinking about it now, but they can produce a damaged nominee, a fractured party, and it could hand that race to us, a race that they should win, right?
Yep, you're absolutely right. Well, this is 8 o'clock, Tim. This has been the Cousin Divine, and we missed Catherine, but, man, this hour flew by. But
yes, it did.
Next week, yeah, we'll have another show. We'll have Catherine back and the full team, and they'll tell them what kind of guest for you. Night.
Okay, good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution. Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.